There are some who are so miserable in the spirit land that they would fain curse God and die. But even these unhappy souls are not outside the law of progress, and by, when they shall be made able to perceive that there is a better way, and that the way is open for them to ascend from their hell and to heaven, as for all others, if they can perceive the truth of this, they will embrace it, and rapidly ascend out of darkness into light. Question. Can the pure and sinless, as infants, appreciate and enjoy heaven as highly as those who have known life's conflicts and trials? Answer. Well, the infant's heaven is just as perfect a heaven as the heaven of mature age. The infant can enjoy just as large an amount of heaven, according to its own life, as mature age. It is only a different condition of the same element, happiness. By Theodore Parker, September 9, 1867. Question. Will the intelligence give his opinion of the following text? And Jesus, when he was baptized, went up straightway out of the water, and lo, the heavens were opened unto him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting upon him, and lo, a voice from heaven, saying, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Answer. There can be but one rational opinion concerning that text, it seems to us. It is a well-known fact, or it is generally believed by those who claim to have a knowledge of the manifestations of spirits disembodied, that Jesus was a medium for such manifestations, that his entire life was but a series of spirit manifestations. He seemed to stand with one foot upon the spirit shores and the other here, and there was a perfect distribution of spiritual power through his organization. The record tells us that the heavens were opened, and he saw the Spirit of God, like a dove, descending upon him, and he heard a voice, saying, Ayo, this is my beloved Son. Well, why not? The Spirit of God performs like so-called miracles even today, and has performed them in every age, for in every age there have been ears attuned to spirit voices. There have been eyes that could perceive spirit forms, there have been those, in their physical senses, who could take cognizance of the conditions of spirit life. Now, as Jesus possessed a highly developed physical and spiritual organization, or, in other words, as he was perfectly rounded in spiritual and in physical form, so then he would be well able to receive perfect manifestations from the world of mind. We believe it to be but a spirit manifestation precisely similar to the manifestations that have occurred in every age, and that are occurring on a very large scale in this age. Question. Will the controlling intelligence please to tell us why spirits do not give their whole names when asked so to do while communicating through test mediums? They will give their first name, but seldom give the surname, when, if the whole name were given, it would give much better satisfaction to skeptical people. Answer. All spirit is obliged to use the medium of matter in communicating upon the plane of matter. You use the body which you call your own. It is your medium, and by long assimilation you have become thoroughly used to its control. You know how to use it. It has become in the external part of your spirit, because all the manifestations of your spirit have been to a certain extent done with the medium, the body. Therefore, through this medium you can more perfectly manifest as a spirit, than through any other. By death comes. It cuts the cord that bound you to the medium, the body. The golden bowl is broken, the cord is destroyed, or cut asunder, but the fountain of life remains. Now, then, if the fountain would manifest again upon the earthly plane, it must seek out a medium, and your own good sense will tell you that unless the medium could be used for many times by the spirit, and become perfectly assimilated with it, the manifestations must be more or less imperfect. If the spirit can but manifest imperfectly through the medium that nature has furnished it, your own bodies, namely, then surely you should not expect perfect manifestations through a medium that is simply taken up for the occasion. Spirits labor under a great many more disadvantages in returning to manifest here after death than you have any idea of. When they return, they are suddenly ushered back again to the world they had been taken from, and 1,000, perhaps 10,000 times 10,000, things, thoughts, forms, conditions, press upon them, and their medium is imperfect, consequently they find their work very hard, and they struggle, oh, how earnestly and laboriously sometimes, to give even one word. Names are hard to give, first, for this reason, when the sitter comes into rapport with the medium and the spirit who has a desire to possess the medium and to manifest through it, the first, most intense, and most positive thought of the sitter is the name of the party that is to control. It is perfectly natural that this should be first, that it should occupy the most prominent seat in the realm of thought, but its naturalness does not prevent it from being the greatest barrier to the giving of the name that could possibly be interposed. If it were possible for the sitter to render his mind entirely passive to what might come, the manifestations would be far more reliable, and names would come much easier. Why is it that there is scarcely any difficulty in giving names at this place? Now ask yourself the question as I have asked it. Is it not because you do not know who is coming? Because you have no expectation of what name is to be given? Surely it is. If you expected Edward Everett to speak to you on a certain occasion, all your minds would be possessed with the name of Edward Everett, and it would be almost impossible for him to give the name. He might identify himself in 1,000 other ways, but to give the name would be hard. All persons who are in the habit of visiting mediums should remember there is a great law governing all spirit manifestations. It governs you in the control of your own body. That is your medium while you are here. The great law holds good after you have left that body. If you desire to return through some other body, there is the law meeting you face to face. You cannot infringe upon it, cannot put it under your feet. It is there greater than you are, and you must obey it. And the nearer you come to an understanding of the law governing spirit manifestations, the better will be the manifestations, and the more perfect and satisfactory. But the further you are from an understanding of the law, the more vague will be the manifestations, and the more unsatisfactory. Therefore become students, every one of you. Entered the school of spiritual science, and there study day after day, year after year, if need be, till you shall be able to grapple with the law understandingly. Even then you cannot control it, but you will know how to take advantage of it, or, in other words, to act in harmony with it. The law is constantly by you. You cannot separate yourself from it, not in any one thought or act. Therefore, whether living here, or living as your speaker lives after death, it matters not, the law is clear, and obey it you must. And if the law says it is hard to give a name that is registered upon the mind of the sitter, then the law must be obeyed. There is no going around it nor through it. You must bow down before it. By Joseph Lowenthal, a Jew, and George Answer. Redman, September 10, 1867. Question. We often see through personating mediums the death scene, as we call it, so faithfully enacted, that it seems but a repetition of the same thing. Now, what I wish to know is this, how is it so faithfully reproduced? Is the departing spirit conscious all the time enough to remember so definitely all those motions of the physical? I have always thought there was a time when most, if not all, were unconscious, at the time of change, or immediately after. Is it so? Answer. The soul never for one instant loses its consciousness, that which belongs to it as an immortal soul. But it is sometimes shut out from the experiences of human life by the circumstances that surround itself, and attend human life. Therefore it is that it is sometimes unconscious to external circumstances, but never in the absolute unconscious of its own soul realities. These repetitions of scenes, called scenes of death, are easily produced, because they make a very vivid and very clear impression upon the mind of every spirit. Though in the external there is no consciousness, in the internal the spirit is conscious and active, and the recording angel never fails to take down the most minute circumstances. Everything is faithfully transcribed, and therefore can be, under proper circumstances, reproduced. These mediums are mirrors that seem to be hung between the two states of being, and if the surface is clear, the reflection will be correspondingly clear, but if it is spotted, the reflection will be correspondingly deformed. Question. From one of the audience. I would ask, what is the recording angel? Answer. It is sometimes called memory. That name or term may answer as well as any other. You have often been told that the attribute of memory was eternal, that whatever condition the soul passed through, that condition it retained by virtue of the power of memory, and under certain circumstances it was able to call it up again into active life. The circumstances through which every soul is called to pass, become the external characteristics of that soul, and no one thing, even the most minute, is ever lost. By Theodore Parker, September 12, 1867. Question. Do all spirits who have left the human form, after they arrive in the world of spirits, have the power to communicate through mediums here, or do only those who were the most mediumistic while here in the form have the power to communicate? Answer. Those who were the most mediumistic while here, have the most power in making these mundane manifestations. However, it is a gift that all may avail themselves of, if they seek so to do. Question. By one of the audience. The saying is, that like attracts like. Still, we do find the opposite sometimes. What are the causes that attract spirits to persons of an entirely opposite character? Answer. The causes are legion. It would be impossible to enumerate them. Sometimes a disembodied intelligence or spirit is attracted to a subject or medium in consequence of the external surroundings, surroundings that are in no way connected with the medium. Sometimes it is in consequence of some physical ailment, sometimes the contrary. Sometimes the quiet mind of the subject attracts them, sometimes the turbulent mind. Indeed, the causes that are in constant operation to attract all classes of spirits earthward are innumerable. Spirit. A query has come to us, as emanating from the late National Convention at Cleveland, and it is this: what do higher intelligences in the spirit land believe concerning the manifestations of the Davenports and other mediums through whom similar manifestations are given? Are they genuine spirit manifestations? Or are they jugglery? Well, whatever your speaker might assert, would be simply an assertion. Whatever belief belongs to him, as a spirit, belongs exclusively to him. Therefore, whatever opinion is offered belongs also to him, and he alone is responsible for it. The manifestations given through the Davenports, and other so-called physical mediums, are, in the majority, genuine and of spiritual origin. And whoso desire to understand this thing for themselves, have only to put the manifestations in one scale and their reason in the other, and the solution will come as a natural sequence. These or analogous manifestations have had existence throughout every condition of intelligent being. There has never been a time in the history of the world when these so-called physical manifestations have not been in existence in some form or some peculiar phase. It is absolute folly, and betrays the sheerest ignorance on the part of those who deny their genuineness, or assume that they are entirely dependent upon trickery, jugglery, or whatever like term you may see fit to employ. I say it betrays ignorance, and still more, it betrays a certain something which is akin to church bigotry, for there are other bigots than theological bigots, and quite as many bigots in spiritualism as in any other ism. We are sorry to be obliged to affirm this so forcibly, but it is absolutely true. We will go still further, and declare that there are more bigots among those who have come out from the churches, and declared themselves free from all kinds of bigotry, than there are to be found in the churches. The Presbyterian is bound hand and foot by a certain kind of belief, and he sticks to it, in most cases, very rigidly. Spiritualists abound in the self-same way, for we find them here, there, and everywhere setting up certain very rigid standards of their own, and declaring that they are absolutely right, and there is no appeal from their standard. They have got the highest, the best, and the only genuine spiritualism, when the truth is, the churches have had experience in it, and those who have no belief in any kind of God have had it. It is as free as the air. It is extensive as life. Spiritualism means something more than what is bound up in the simple name. It means the science of life. It means that life God manifests through every kind of form, through every possible degree of thought. It means that God can rap upon a table to convince you that you will live after death, and not degrade himself, as he can speak through the highest angel in the courts of heaven. Spiritualism of itself is humble. It takes upon itself no crowns. It is exceedingly simple. A child may understand it. But they who prate so loudly against these lower manifestations, as they are pleased to term them, simply betray their ignorance, ignorance of God and his laws, ignorance of the alphabet of life. They would fain destroy the ladder over which they have ascended, because, forsooth, they need it no longer, or because they have entered the temple by some other way, though thousands and tens of thousands have need to enter it this way. They, in their foolishness, determine that God doesn't understand his business, and because he doesn't, they are going to guide the car of progress for themselves. But poor, puny humanity will find by and by that God is God, despite all forms and ceremonies, and he descends to the simplest manifestations of life without losing his godship. He blooms in the violet, is heard in the tiny wrappings. His voice is in the thunder, and his wisdom with the angels. He is everywhere. Yes, these manifestations are, in the majority, genuine, absolutely genuine, and whoso says they are not, says what is false. By William E. Channing, September 16, 1867. Question. Has the spirit body corresponding organs, anatomically considered, which pertained to the mortal body? And when the spirit enters the spirit world, has it the same desires, inclinations, and tastes that governed it here? And further, is the spirit body an exact likeness or counterpart of the mortal body, of a well-developed mortal body at the ultimate of its mundane life? Answer. Externally, the spirit body corresponds to the natural body, but there is a constant internal change going on. As the spirit, mentally, becomes larger, more advanced in wisdom, the external takes on the changes of the internal, becomes more beautiful, more perfectly formed, more in accordance with the needs of the indwelling intelligence. The characteristics of the soul are the agencies entrusted with the formation of the spirit body, and they were never known to forget, never known to make false representations. On the contrary, they are very precise, and they always give a delineation in the external from the internal. Whatever a man or woman is in the spirit land, the representation appears upon the external. They cannot seem to be what they are not. There is no such thing as disguising one's soul characteristics after death. All things are governed by stern, immutable law, and the soul is not exempt from law, form is not exempt from law, but all move by virtue of law, and law that is adapted to their unfoldment. Every form in being changes its external characteristics according to its own internal law. These human forms that exist upon this continent today are not exactly what they were many, many years ago. No, there are certain marked characteristics remaining, but a close observer, a critical analyzer can behold a very great change. Yes, the spirit body does retain the external organic life so far as form is concerned, if you speak of it as belonging to human life. All the various organs are represented in the spirit body. And if they are represented in the spirit body, they are for use. Yes, and the soul has need of them. But the necessities of the soul are not exactly the necessities of the physical body. One may need the grains and fruits and animal life of the sphere to which it has been born, and the other also needs the fruits and grains and animal life of the sphere to which it belongs. There is a difference. One is the crude, the other is the refined, the ethereal. One is the outside life, the other is the inside life. The mechanic in the spirit land deals with the thoughts of the mechanic, The fruit grower in the spirit land deals with the thoughts of the fruit. The artist deals with the thoughts of the beautiful representations that you have here in mortal life. And yet thought is present in tangible form in the spirit land, clearly and brightly and lawfully defined. It is not a world of imagination. It is not a vague, unsubstantial, unreal world. No. It is a world substantial and real. It is a step beyond this mundane physical world. It is the beautiful perfection of this world. If the rose is beautiful here, it is far more beautiful there. All forms that are represented on the earth, and these physical forms are no exception, find also a representation in the spirit land. You will all learn the truth of my statements sooner or later. Today they may seem to be vagaries, founded upon nothing, but by and by you will realize their truth, their soundness, and know by experience what you can never know by theory. Question. Would it not be better for the world, and for the mediums who possess such bad health or bad dispositions as to attract only evil spirits, to give up their mediumship? Ought not mediums to be a pure and holy class to do much good? Answer. Your correspondent talks of giving up mediumship, as if it were a thing easily done, when the real truth is, it cannot be given up, any more than it can be taken on. Mediumship, genuine mediumship, is the gift of God. He gave it, and he alone can take it. When we hear mediums, or those who call themselves such, declaring that unless the people and the spirits do thus and so they will give up their mediumship, we know that such are not what they purport to be, for as mediumship is of God, it is God who guards it, and God alone who can take it from the subject. The spirit world is peopled with a vast variety of intelligences, from the highest to the lowest, and it is a law of divine life that every soul shall unfold or perfect itself through the agencies of being as best it can. Now, then, if some depraved souls find that they can unfold more readily by returning to earth and manifesting through media, who shall say they shall not come? Who has the right to determine concerning their coming? It is vain for you to declare that no undeveloped or depraved spirit can return unless there is some attraction within the medium's life. Jesus, the purest of all mediums, either ancient or modern, attracted to himself a legion of undeveloped spirits, and he taught them, he preached unto them, he liberated them from their dark surroundings, he led them by his own light up the Mount of Transfiguration. He was their savior. But if he had banished them, could he have been? Never. Go ye, and learn of him, and if darkness comes to you praying for light, even if its manifestations are of the most diabolical kind, turn not a deaf ear, but listen, and perchance you may catch the notes of an angel even there. Extend a hand. Though thy brother or thy sister be in the very depths of hell, if you are all right they cannot harm you. Be sure that your own garments are spotless, be sure of your own internal holiness, then no filth can attach itself to your external lives. Though you may walk through all the darkness that ever closed around the depraved spirit, it cannot harm you. By John Pierpont, September 24, 1867. Question. Where does the spirit of Mrs. Conant remain while another spirit takes possession of her organism? Answer. Sometimes she remains in a dormant state within her own physical life. But oftener her conscious part retires, goes out sometimes among her friends here in earth life, and sometimes is attracted off to different lands here on earth, and is able to observe, in her spirit, the different conditions of being where she is at the present time. As spirit is superior to matter, it can break the bonds of matter, and go forth from matter at will, therefore, if there is any attracting power to those points, if the spirit desires to follow that attraction, it can do so. Question. And does it retain its identity? Answer. And at the same time retains its identity. The body is but the medium of the spirit, and although it is better adapted to the spirit that has dwelt with it from its natural birth, yet it can be used also by any spirit who understands the laws governing in such cases. There are several instances recorded where the spirit of the medium has given distinct and positive and unmistakable evidence of its identity in places besides where the form was located during the manifestation of some foreign spirit. She has manifested in England, in Germany, in Roxbury, localities apart from the place where the body was at the time. And when questioned concerning answers that were given to questions put to her while she was apart from the body, when questioned of them, after returning to the body, her answer was, "I should have said so if I had been questioned while in conscious relation with the body," thus proving that the spirit was the same outside of the body that it was within it, and acting through it. By Theodore Parker, September 26, 1867. Question. Please to distinguish between the phenomena that characterized the seers or prophets of the Old and New Testament, and the phenomena now witnessed through our mediums. Answer. There is a difference, but it is not in principle. It is simply in outward life, outward expression. The occult manifestations that were said to have had life in the past, were dependent upon the forms through which they were called to manifest. The stream receives its shape from the channel through which it flows. The rays of light receive their colors from the channel through which they flow, and the mediumistic atmosphere, by which they are surrounded. So it is of spirit manifestations. The manifestations of every age partake of their intellectual, the moral, and the religious standard of the age. The manifestations of ancient times corresponded to the development of those times, the development of mind, the development of matter, and the manifestations of today correspond with the development of today. They answer the requirements of the time in which they exist. The manifestations of ancient times would be hardly thoroughly digested by you of today. And yet their inner life is absolutely the same. When resolved to their primaries, they are one, and you cannot separate them. The condition exists only in another form of manifestation. Question. Was Jesus any other than a brother of our humanity, a gifted and distinguished medium? Answer. No, none other, absolutely none other. He was the child of our great Father, God, and our brother, gifted as all God's children are gifted, according to their own capacities of reception. Whoever can receive largely, becomes largely gifted, and is able to give much unto those by whom they are surrounded. Jesus could receive largely from the fountain of wisdom and truth, and he became thus a shining light, not only to the age in which he lived, but that light that continued to shine down the ages, until today it is radiant as ever to us. By Father Henry Fitz-James, September 30, 1867. Question. Can a spirit, after leaving the form, take cognizance of material forms any farther than what is seen by the medium? Answer. A spirit that has passed through the chemical change called death, perceives the external of all forms that are upon the face of the earth, through the electromagnetic aura that emanates from mediumistic physical bodies. It is not necessary that the spirit should have absolute control of such a body at the time it perceives these objects. But it is absolutely necessary that it should come within that magnetic atmosphere, for by so doing they come into rapport with the external forms that have an existence upon the face of the earth. For instance, when I am apart from this physical body, this medium, should I wish to behold any object in this room, I should first seek to come within the atmosphere or magnetic sphere of this medium, or some other that might be in this locality. When the scientific man desires to gain a clear understanding of the heavens, he takes his glass, that he may come into rapport with the heavenly bodies through the peculiar power of the glass. Upon precisely the same conditions the spirit uses the medium, or the magnetic life that passes from these mediums, by which they may come into rapport with these external forms. There are heavenly bodies so far distant from your external vision that you cannot, without some extra aid, behold them, but if you can obtain the necessary extra aid, you can behold them. So with regard to these objects, we can see them, we can feel them. We can smell the aroma of your flowers by coming into rapport with them. But in our proper spiritual state we behold only the spiritual part of these flowers. referring to a vase of flowers upon the table, by William E. Channing, October 1, 1867. Question.